Third hour, Darren Donick and Chase here on ESPN 102.5 The Game on this Thursday afternoon. Candace Story Lee, just named the full-time athletics director at Vanderbilt, will join us at the bottom of this hour. We know a lot of you are working from home during these times. You can stream us from anywhere. You could download the Game Nashville app. That's an option. Also enable Alexa Skill or Google Home and ask it to play 102.5 The Game. Or you can live stream from our website, which is thegamenashville.com. Bill Barnwell is on the line with us from ESPN, ESPN.com. Bill has put out just kind of ranking the offseason moves in the NFL from worst to first. And he now joins us. Bill, how you doing?
Hey, how's it going?
Kind of take us into, you know, what went into how you determine who had the best offseason and who had the worst offseason, and then we'll kind of do a little bit of deeper dive from there.
Yeah, so I'm thinking the general idea is just basically, you know, the biggest thing is talent, right? Who added the most talent versus who had the most talent outgoing, and then look at the specific needs for each team. How do they address those needs? The contracts, were they giving out exorbitant contracts? Were they giving out relatively good deals relative to the rest of the market? And then did they pick up anything in the future? They pick up draft capital for next year. You know, did you trade down? Did you trade a player for a pick? Do you have something coming in 2021 that you didn't have heading into the offseason? So basically just, you know, looking at their roster and their needs and their situation in February and looking at it now, who improved the most between February and as we sit here at the end of May?
Did you feel weird and awkward? You know, I feel like we're always, you know, making sure before we touch the stove, when we talk about the Cleveland Browns, before we jump in there to praise them and get excited about the Cleveland Browns, because you may get burned. Was there hesitation ranking them so high and what you liked about their offseason?
Always hesitation. Saying something nice about the Cleveland Browns. Always, always, always got to be careful. But I will say, last year I was sitting here saying, hey, the offensive line is a big concern. This year, if they fail, I'm happy to say I'm wrong, because I think they really addressed that problem. That was their biggest obvious concern this time last year. And not only did they, you know, sign Jack Conklin, not only did they draft Cedric Wilson in the first round, so now you have your two tackles. If they can both stay healthy, obviously, you know, Titans fan know that can be an issue with Jack Conklin, but you go out, you add Austin Hooper, you even add Bill Callahan, who was an excellent, excellent offensive line coach. So, you know, I mean, anything can happen with the Browns. Anything often does happen. You know, it's always a difficult thing for the Browns, but I do think Baker Mayfield, seeing that list of everything he wanted heading into the offseason, he got everything he could have possibly asked for.
Well, the good news is they won't have to worry about hearing the hype train rolling down the tracks going into this season like they did last season. It's pretty interesting because Jack Conklin, of course, who was with the Titans, now with the Browns. So it was a couple teams that you liked. Also, the other one was the Broncos right behind them that also made the trade for Jarrell Casey from the Titans. What did you like? And the Titans will have to play both of those teams on their schedule. What did you like about what Denver did?
Yeah, I mean, I like the Casey trade. I understand why Tennessee did it. You know, they're obviously going to give Jeffrey Simmons more playing time. You know, Casey is probably a guy who they would have cut for cap space, and that's fine. That's reasonable from Tennessee's perspective, but just getting a guy who's as productive as Casey, even if he wasn't maybe the guy he was in years past in 2019, getting that guy for basically, you know, nothing, a late seventh-round pick, you know, basically the cheapest possible, you know, compensation you can give up, I really like that move. And then I think on the flip side, look at the offense. We don't know what Drew Lock is, right? Drew Lock might be a pretty mediocre quarterback. He might be a really good quarterback. We've seen him for five starts. We don't know. What we do know is that giving him the best chance to succeed is going to be about giving him weapons. And look what the Broncos did. They go out, they signed Melvin Gordon. They draft Jerry Jeudy and KJ Hamler with their first two picks. They bring in Pat Shurmur, who's been a good offensive coordinator in stops past. I just think when you have a borderline guy like a Drew Lock, you have to surround him with talent. And I think John Elway did exactly that this offseason. So I really like what the Broncos did overall.
So the other one I want to touch on before I throw it to Willie is, we all remember right before training camp when the news came across. I saw it in a hotel room on ESPN, the crawler, of breaking news: Andrew Luck, and you know, mm-hmm. tells the Colts he's retiring. And we all will remember that moment of holy cow on a Saturday. And we saw how the Colts season played out without Andrew Luck. So they have made some significant moves in the offseason. We were trying to figure out, okay, what are the Colts going into this season? Clearly, you liked what they did.
Yeah, I do. I had them fourth, and same thing as you guys. I actually did a fantasy draft that day, and I was out with the friends from the draft that night, you know, went to dinner. We're sitting at the bar waiting for our table to open up, and I saw a really, you know, bright red ticker pop up on ESPN on the TV behind the bar, and I said, well, that's interesting. And then I saw Andrew Luck news, and I said, well, guys, nice hanging out with you. I got to go home and get to work, unfortunately. So it was a interesting evening. But, yeah, I mean, you know, I think they handled it about as well as they could have, given the circumstances, given when Andrew Luck retired. Couldn't really make a move to replace him at that point of the offseason. So, you know, they got to evaluate Jacoby Brissett. They said, hey, you're, you know, talented backup, maybe not the guy for us as a starter in the long term. But you had Philip Rivers, a guy who I think – you know, played behind maybe one of the worst tackle situations in football last year, a guy who did throw a bunch of interceptions, mostly late in the year, and mostly in situations where his team was trailing in the fourth quarter, where he kind of had to throw and make sort of risky throws to catch up. And I think when you are in an offense where you don't have to do that quite as frequently, I think the Colts are going to be not a great offense, but I think a good offense, going to run the ball very effectively. A great offensive line should be able to protect Rivers, a bunch of weapons in the passing game. A pretty good defense. We hope they're going to be healthier than the Chargers were last year and than the Chargers are seemingly every year. But I think they added a upgraded quarterback. And then DeForest Buckner, maybe the best lineman on that great Niners line from a year ago. So you add an impactful interior disruptor. You upgrade a quarterback. Those are two of the most important positions in football. So I think the Colts, you know, upgraded at those key spots.
Talking to Bill Barnwell from ESPN. If you look on ESPN.com right now, he's got the rankings of all of the offseason maneuvers of the NFL teams. And, Bill, you had some interesting thoughts on how the Titans played their cards with the quarterback situation. I mean, here we are sitting as we go into Memorial Day weekend with Cam Newton still sitting out there, guys like Andy Dalton, proven starters, taking a backup role for kind of an eye-popping price in a lot of ways. And so in retrospect, you had some thoughts on how the Titans went about re-signing Ryan Tannehill.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think there's a really interesting opportunity here. Think about Ryan Tannehill. Think about this offense. We know Tennessee wants to run the football. That's what they're built around. They want to work off of play action and get Tannehill, you know, hitting throws downfield off of play action. And they were awesome at that last year. They were fantastic. The offense worked. Everything made sense. The only issue I have with Ryan Tannehill is you look at his health history. This is a guy who hadn't been healthy before 2019, where he played a partial season since 2015. Two torn ACLs, nerve issue. You know, there's concerns about him staying healthy for 16 games for me. And now, look at that contract they handed out. The money, the annual salary, about what you would expect, over $30 million a year, that's fine. Not an issue there. But they had to guarantee basically three seasons, only two on paper. But it's either going to be, you know, about $90 million or $60 million for 1 year, which is not going to happen, or $90 million or so for 3 years. And that's, realistically, they're committing to Ryan Tannehill for the next three seasons because of what he did last year. Now, I can't fault them for doing that. I think that's understandable given how he played. I just think history says when you have a guy who the league didn't really want last year, a guy who the Dolphins had to attach a draft pick or attach money to get a draft pick back from Tennessee in the Tannehill trade, you know, going from having a guy who's worth maybe 1 year on a $5 million deal to guaranteeing 3 years, it's pretty rough. So I wonder if maybe they would have been better off saying, hey, you know, we appreciate what you did. We're going to be a run-first football team. We're going to try and save money at quarterback. Let's go out and get a Nick Foles or an Andy Dalton at a much cheaper price. And we can get money to maybe keeping Jack Conklin or spending our money elsewhere and sort of being a run-first, run-intensive football team. I don't think that's right or wrong. I don't think there's a correct answer, but I think that's an interesting sort of plan B to what they did during the offseason itself.
Time will tell. And of course, you don't have this under your category of what's left to do, but as you talk about Tannehill's injury history, one of the things we've kicked around here is with the remaining people out there, is there the right guy, and this is what you do very well, is you try to assign a price and a value to that. So how would you go about finding the right backup quarterback for Ryan Tannehill as an insurance policy? Right now, they have a couple of guys that, you know, Logan Woodside and a guy that they just drafted in Cole McDonald, who are obviously very unproven.
Yeah, I think you want to find a guy who can fit your scheme. It's not going to, you know, be totally different. You know, you look at The Chargers last year are a good example. They had Phillip Rivers as their starter and Tyrod Taylor as their backup. And I like Tyrod Taylor. Those are two very different quarterbacks. You have to fundamentally change what you do on offense if you're going to have Tyrod Taylor be your quarterback as opposed to Phillip Rivers. Same thing with the Ravens when they had Joe Flacco and Lamar Jackson. Well, Lamar Jackson's awesome. He's not Joe Flacco. They're two totally different guys running two totally different offenses. So I think if you want to look for a backup quarterback, you want someone who can work off a play action. You want someone who can be, you know, not someone who's going to run the ball 10 times a game for the sake of running it, not a Lamar Jackson type, but someone who, you know, can be effective running the football, who can be a part of your power offense. And I do think Cam Newton does make sense. You know, a guy who was very effective off a play action in 2017, in the first half of 2018 when he was healthy, a guy who can be a source of rushing yards and someone who can help out Derrick Henry in short yardage, and a guy who, you know, was an NFL MVP, a guy who, you know, you're buying low on. And with Tannehill, you know, I think you have to kind of sit here and say, hey, if he plays 16 games, we're lucky. More likely, he probably plays 14 games. And then if you have Cam, from Cam's side, there's no starting jobs left. They're, you know, you're going to the CFL or the XFL, you know, and those leagues aren't even running right now. So if Cam wants to play in the NFL this year, it's going to be as a backup primarily. So I think of the options available, I think Tennessee would make a lot of sense for him as well. So the price tag is tough, but, you know, would it be $5 million? Would it be $3 million? Would it be $7 million? I mean, Cam Newton, unfortunately, does not have many options. So he might have to settle for a pretty small deal in the same way that, you know, Jameis Winston did with the Saints.
You also have pretty clear-cut, you know, thoughts on what to do about Derrick Henry long-term. We know how important he is to the team right now, but we know also about what running backs can have value-wise in a very short period of time with all the carries and such. So tell us, relay what you wrote about what you would do if you're John Robinson to try to address his contract situation beyond the franchise tag.
It's so tough. Because you look at Derrick Henry, man, I mean, what else could he have done to make you think he was worth a long-term contract, right? I mean, the guy put the team on his back. You know, since he kind of got that starting job for good in 2018, he's been the leading rusher in all of football. And a guy who was such a force of nature in the postseason, you know, led them really to the AFC Championship game. He's done a lot. I mean, he's done exactly what you would have hoped for when you drafted him since he's been in that starting role and deserves to get paid as such. The problem is, you go through history, go through the recent history of running backs getting paid. I mean, you have Todd Gurley, you have David Johnson, you have Devontae Freeman, you have Chris Johnson. Chris Johnson's a perfect example. You know, a guy who everything could have hoped for, deserved to get paid, got paid, and then was totally ordinary after he got paid. And I don't think there's a motivation thing. I don't think it's that, you know, he didn't try as hard. He wasn't as good of a player. I think he was just as good of a runner. Just the reality is running backs don't have long shelf lives at the NFL level. It's tough. It's a very tough position, and the economics are really, really messed up. You know, should running backs get paid more as rookies? I think so, yeah. But, you know, I mean, as good as some of these guys are, history tells us the guys who play well on that second contract, I mean, you have like a 20% chance. They really are the exceptions to the rule. So with Derrick Henry, you know, I don't know how he would feel about this. I don't think he would appreciate it most likely, but I think you have to go year to year and just say, hey, we're going to keep the franchise tag put aside for Derrick Henry. And if he continues to play well, we will pay him like a top five running back year to year. But then after, if he does struggle, we're going to have to move on because we have to find, you know, a new running back on a rookie deal because that's where the value is at the end of the day.
We're talking to Bill Barnwell of ESPN, ESPN.com. Fifth on your list, the Dallas Cowboys. And I believe anyone that watches football knows that Mike McCarthy is a clear upgrade over Jason Garrett as the head coach. He's a Super Bowl winning coach. Maybe some would say that he's overrated, but still I think that the hire fits what they have in Dallas. So let's start there with your number five ranking. I would assume you put a lot of stock in the fact that they have upgraded at head coach.
Absolutely. Not only head coach, but also I think they got the coaching staff really right. You know, not only bring in Mike McCarthy, who, you know, for what issues I have with Mike McCarthy, maybe some game management stuff, you know, in the playoffs, that stuff you can fix. I mean, generally, he's been a very good head coach. Packers were generally very successful over the course of his tenure with that team. Now, you keep Kellen Moore by his advanced metrics, like Football Outsiders' DVOA metric, which is the most predictive and most effective, measure of team performance I've seen. Cowboys were the second-best offense in football last year under Kellen Moore in his first season with the Cowboys. Now, even if you don't want to believe in that. This is still a top five offense to me. So you keep Kellen Moore. I think that's great. I think you absolutely want to keep him around. Then you had John Fossil, a guy who, you know, such an excellent special teams coordinator with the Rams. I mean, a guy who had so many fakes dialed up, but a guy where you know, their specialist, Greg Zuerlein, who, by the way, also now with the Cowboys, Johnny Hecker, they were the best specialists in football with Jeff Fisher. That was even before Sean McVay got there when Fossil was there. So I do think that Fossil's done great work. I think he's a great addition. Not, you know, not going to be a headline guy, but someone who I think does help you out in the margins. And then I like what they did in offense. I think getting weapons for Dak Prescott is going to help. Amari Cooper's contract, pretty reasonable. You know, $20 million a year is a lot of money, but only two guaranteed years, which I think is, you know, kind of an underrated thing when people realize or think about contracts. Only having those 2 years is really helpful, gives you a lot of flexibility relative to having 3 years guaranteed. You bring in Dalton on a one-year deal for pretty modest money. C.D. Lamb, of course, excellent Oklahoma receiver, goes in the first round. I just think they really hit a lot of things this offseason, and I think they're positioned to be a Super Bowl contender here in 2020.
Now the multi-million dollar question will be Dak Prescott and how much they get him signed for. You mentioned Andy Dalton. I've always kind of looked at that as he'd be a solid backup for any team, but that's a little bit of an insurance policy if you get into some sort of negotiation with Dak. So do you think they get it done before or during training camp, and what do you think the number is?
Yeah, I mean, you know, I do think they get it done because the reality is if you think right now, if you're the Dallas Cowboys and you think Dak Prescott's asking price is too high, it's never going to get done because the price is only going up. You know, maybe Dak suffers a serious knee injury. Obviously, I hope it doesn't happen. That would be the only situation where it would go down. I mean, you know, Dak, reality is Dak is a good quarterback. He might not be the best quarterback in football, but he's very good. And, you know, Deshaun Watson's about to get paid. Patrick Mahomes is about to get paid. And Dak Prescott is not on that same level as those two guys, but because the market is going to rise and because Dak Prescott is getting closer and closer to free agency, the Cowboys have less and less leverage, and Dak can ask for more and more because we saw with Kirk Cousins, right, where Kirk Cousins, you know, probably in the 10 to 15 range in terms of quarterbacks, I think it's fair to say, maybe, you know, maybe closer to 7 or 8 last year. He had a really good year, but the guy who's never going to be Patrick Mahomes, because he was able to get to the unrestricted free agent market without a tag, he got a massive deal in terms of the, you know, guarantee $84 million from the Vikings. So Dak now, 2 years away from unrestricted free agency, most likely. Cowboys can't really tag him three times. They really have one more tag left after this year with a salary cap that's going to rise. Maybe not next year, but certainly the year after that. Dak's only going to get more expensive. So if you're the Cowboys and you're sitting here saying, you know, we got to have Dak come down, Dak Prescott has no reason to ask for less money. His price is only going to go up because of the market factors around him.
Of the teams.
So at the end of the day.
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, of the teams that you have on the back half or the back part of your list, so we know that Houston was the 32nd team that you had ranked. New England is 30th. But of those teams, probably, you know, 22 back, which team do you think has the best resume, the best chance to maybe shock some people and actually have a good season?
Patriots. You know, I have to go with Bill Belichick here. You know, I just think it's the reality of the situation. Like, he's really good at this, better than me, for sure. You know, maybe Jared Stidham's a good player. It's hard to say. You know, there's really not much precedent for a team turning their, you know, franchise over to a guy who's so untested, who was not a high pick. It just really doesn't happen very frequently. But Bill Belichick's earned the benefit of the doubt, man. At the end of the day, like, he knows what he's doing. So, you know, I think Tom Brady is going to be better than Jared Stidham in 2020, but, you know, I do think the Patriots have a very good defense. They have a good offensive line. They have better than, I think, better receivers that I think people give them credit for when everyone's healthy. So it's not going to be the same team, but could they be a 9-10 win football team? Yeah, absolutely. And then I think the Lions as well, a team that could be better than people expect, a team that was pretty good with Matthew Stafford, a quarterback. Obviously, once he got hurt, they were a mess. They went 0-8, I believe, or 0-9 with him with him injured. So Stafford has not been a guy who's had a ton of injuries in years past, been able to play through some stuff. So you figure you probably get 16 games out of Stafford. That's a much better football team. And some of the moves they made, I have questions about, but overall, I do think they're going to be a team that could be, you know, kind of a surprise division contender.
Bill, appreciate the visit. Continue to be safe. Thanks for doing this, and we'll talk to you down the road.
Of course. Anytime. Happy to help.
All right, that is Bill Barnwell, ESPN, ESPN.com. We were just talking about his rankings of 1 through 32 in the NFL offseason. Speaking of the NFL, I don't know if you guys saw this while we were talking with Bill. It looks like some teams right now are receiving updates. This is according to Tom Pelissero with the NFL Network of possible rule changes. So these are a proposal that's out there, and one of the rule changes. Listen to this. I want you to sit down. Are you sitting down?
I am sitting down.
I am. I'm sitting down.
You're going to need to be sitting down on this one. That instead of the onside kick, a team would be allowed the chance to maintain possession by going for it at their own 24-yard line on a 4th and 15 situation. And he finishes the tweet up by saying, it sounds like support for this idea is growing.
I don't hate that, to be honest with you.
Really?
Wait, repeat what it is again.
So, obviously, this would be probably at the end of the game situation, right, where a team has scored and they need to onside kick to try to get the possession back. The team would have the opportunity to go for it at their own 25-yard line, and the down would be 4th and 15. So, instead of the onside kick,
they say,
we're electing to go for the option. And so we'll have 4th and 15 at our own 25.
I'm totally fine with that. They've killed the onside kick. I mean, and I understand.
Yeah, the onside kick, they've got to do something. But I don't know if that's the right way. I feel like now you'd have to – I'm sure some people have put together the percentages of your chances of making a 4th and 15. But somehow I think that's almost too gettable. I'm thinking more like 4th and 20. Like, what's the equivalent? It should be a real. It should be
tough.
A really, really tough
thing. 4th and
15
in the NFL is tough.
And think about this too. So, if I understand this correctly, you get the ball from your own 25-yard line. If you don't get it, does that mean the other team takes over at that spot?
Yes,
of course. Yeah. What else do you think it means?
So, right. So that's my point. That it's not a given because when you first read the rule, 4th and 15, you think more teams might go for it. I think that adds a lot to that decision. Just like an onside kick.
Well,
it doesn't matter.
Onside.
If you're going for the onside kick, it's because the other team is in control. The team that's going for that, what we're talking about, is desperate.
Sure.
If they don't get it, they got nothing to lose. I mean, they're going to lose anyway.
Yeah,
I just like it. I think to put it in perspective, though, over the years, right, in this situation where everybody in the stadium knows you're going for the onside, like there's a percentage of the onside kicks, but you have to work in the surprise onside kicks, like the Super Bowl with the Saints, right? They surprised onside to start the second half. If you take away those and you do only end of the game, what is it, like 15% should be what you get, somewhere around there. Is that the same as 4th and 15? Or what would you think your chances are of picking up a 4th and 15?
Is it 15%? I'd love to know the numbers. I would have said less. Is it 15%?
I think that's about right. I think it's about 15%, if I remember correctly.
And so you're saying what are the percentages of 4th and 15 in the NFL?
4th and 15, yeah.
I don't know. I'd love to know the numbers.
I kind of like my chances, especially if I have a good quarterback, in picking up a 4th and 15 than an onside kick. So, I just don't want to give the offense too much of a chance. I mean, the team that is winning deserves to be in the catbird seat, right? But you got Aaron Rodgers back there, 4th and 15. I'm like, woo.
Yeah.
One play, and he's back in business.
You still have to look at it that, okay, you have to complete a 4th and 15. How much time's on the clock? Then you have to go downfield and get in either score a touchdown or get in field goal range. So, I mean, you're adding that. And Tom Pelissero just added, too, that a team could do this no more than two times a game. So,
Huh.
So that
– And you get it at the 25? You start at the 25?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It's interesting.
It would be – you talk about some drama because one thing that we all agree on is because of the rules now, and I understand completely why they've done it, the onside kick is almost impossible to get. I mean, I think the number is like,
I'm showing
they put that rule in, There's only been less than five per season the whole time, yeah. Whereas before it was higher when you could have all those collisions and
Wasn't there a lot of strategies.
Last
year on Thanksgiving, that was it the Falcons that actually got three of them because they had to keep redoing it? Wasn't that on Thanksgiving last year against the Saints?
I think what I'm trying to look up some articles. I think what I'm seeing right now is 12.5%.
That feels like it would be somewhere
of
around there.
Conversion rate of 4th and 15.
Oh, of 4th and I was going to say of onside kick. But yeah, I mean that. So if they're around the same, I feel like a 4th and 15. The reason I like it, that'd be more exciting because you feel at least. The perception is you have a better chance of converting it, but that's not easy by any means.
It says since the NFL disallowed running starts on the onside kicks,
right.
The success rate has drastically declined. In 2017, 21% of the kicks were converted. So the onside kicks had a 21% rate. After the rule change, it declined to 8%.
Okay.
This season, it was up to 13%. So, I think what I saw was 12.5. So, we'll probably go with 13%.
Okay.
I agree.
We'll come back to this discussion. It's a good, like, how much of a chance do you really deserve in that situation?
Yeah. All right. We'll come back. Candace Storyly, we'll have to table this. Come back. I think it's an interesting discussion, but we'll come back with Vanderbilt Athletics Director Candace Storyly. On the other side, Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.